You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I had an amazing conversation with Morgan Lander and SJ Jones about Kitty Pig. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers.
What is good, Goat Flippers, Lamb Goat Crew? How are you doing this month, this week, whatever? Hope you're doing good. It's December. It's finally cold here in Florida. I'm sure it's been cold where you are at already, and I know you're probably bitching those damn Floridians. It gets under 70 and everyone gets a hoodie on. Well, you're damn right. We are glad to be back this week. We got Yashira on the podcast. They're some local hometown boys, but they're making big noise. They got an album dropping this week, so make sure you go pick that up. We talk about it on the pod. Make sure you visit lambgoat.com for all your metal and hardcore news, reviews, message boards, all that kind of internet fun stuff. Speaking of internet fun stuff, you can follow them on Facebook as well as Twitter and Instagram at lambgoat. Head over to Lamb Goat's YouTube page and make sure you check out all of these episodes in video format. You can smash that subscribe button and that notification bell to be notified anytime that new episodes are uploaded. But you can also be notified when other content like live shows or other online content is uploaded as well, like whatever, news stories or something cool like that. Anyway, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at VanFlip Podcast. Just tweet how we're doing. If you like the show, what guests we should have on, whatever you want to let me know. And you can follow me on Twitter or on Instagram at Lurk City as well. And if you're too lazy, you can go down to the show notes and get all of those links for you right there, including the band / artist that we have on, aka Yashira.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is stuff. Oh no. Oh no, no, no!
Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
Between the Bear and Me has become like my obsessed band. I'm obsessed with them.
They're so great. Good, man.
They are great.
They're so good.
That's going to be great, too. They're just like, they're a crazy band, if you really think about it. Like, you know what I mean?
For sure.
You don't even really have to think about it.
Yeah. Colors Live being better than Colors, that's all you need to know. Like, it's fucking amazing, dude.
That's like, so true.
Yeah.
I would rather listen to Colors Live than the recorded version of Colors.
Well, it's, yeah.
Because it's that good. They're actually that good.
I watch the Kuma Live one all the time.
Mm.
That's my favorite
one. I never listened to that record.
Kuma, oh my God.
Kuma, dude. Ecliptic.
Yeah, it's fucking good, dude.
No, say it like I said it on the podcast with them. I fucked the name up.
Eclectic?
Yeah, I said eclectic.
Oh, eclectic. No!
Yeah, I just rolled with it. Yeah, I fucking rolled with it. I'm like part dyslexic or some shit, you know?
Yeah, fuck it.
So we're like, fuck it, dude. Roll with it. Anyway, yeah, I guess, boys, here we are. We're on the Van Flip. Welcome to my humble new abode. This is the first time we've had anybody in person in a long time, guy, right? Got JP out here working the cameras. It's like we're almost back to full speed.
That's guy.
Anyway, I'm sitting with Luke and Dylan of local Jacksonville band Yashira.
What's up? What's up?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Represent. So you guys got a new record coming out this upcoming week, which will be like, you know, we'll release this episode before the record out as well. But anyway, new record out December 11th. What's the title of it?
Fail to Be. Drops on December 11th, Friday. Yep. We're really excited for that, man. It's been a long time coming, it feels.
First record back since everything's happened in general. But, like, you know, so, like, a lot of stuff obviously went into making this new record. Do you guys want to, like, touch on any of that kind of, you know, what went into making the new record and everything?
Yeah. I mean, It's really tough where to even know where to start.
Yeah. This album was, I don't know, maybe 3-ish years in the making. From the start of, you know, writing it to now, I'd say it's probably been about 3 years in the making. So it's been, a long, long trek to get to this point, and we're just relieved to be here, you know, ready to drop it all, you know, and just get it out.
Yeah, the process started with Seth. So like we had released Shrine, and even before Shrine had been released, we had started writing for this. We didn't know what it'd be called or anything like that or anything. But so we got started on that, and probably how many songs did we finish with him? Probably seven, yeah. And at 6.5, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then he got in the accident, and we kind of set it down for a little while, but not that long, because it wasn't really much of a question of if we were gonna do it again. You know, we knew we felt like we knew right away that we were gonna, just didn't know who we were gonna do it with. Mm-hmm. You know,
the songs are gonna see the light of day no matter what.
Right, exactly.
So we were determined to make that happen. Yeah, it was just finding the right person to fill the shoes, because they're definitely big shoes to fill.
Yeah, and I think that's how most people who probably visit Lamb Goat would probably know you guys. At least your name was when Seth was in the accident, mm-hmm. and passed away and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also, prior to that, you guys did a little, you know, work with Zao.
Yeah.
So we're already past that now.
Yeah. That split was so cool of them to reach out for us, or to us to do. We were in the van on tour with Fit for an Autopsy, mm-hmm. at the time. We were on our way to Pittsburgh, and Scott had messaged me, and I guess they were going to do a split with another band, and that fell through. And we had just played like 2 shows with them in Florida that we just got thrown on like last second. And he asked us to do it, and it was a unanimous yes. Yeah, like, you know, I've been listening to them since I was 9. Like, no joke, probably 9 years old, you know. So it was just crazy to kind of just even have that opportunity open its door at all, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, like, and that's a, you know, a pretty well-established, like, pillar of the scene community to mm-hmm. be, like, you know, working with in general. Mm-hmm. So... So you guys only interacted in those 2 shows, and then they asked you to...
We did, what was it? Aurifest as well with them. So we did Aurifest in Savannah. It was with them, Darkest Hour, and He Is Legend.
Unearthed played.
And Unearthed.
Yeah.
That's a pretty dope lineup there.
It was a great show. It was awesome.
Good. So I want to say that was the first time I had seen them, but...
I don't think we knew them yet, though.
Yeah, we didn't meet them there. But then when we got added to the 2 shows that they did in Florida, we did Orlando and Tampa with them. And they were both just super badass. So that was when we got to meet them and just hit it off with them. And, it kind of just developed from there. They were looking to do a bunch of splits with people around that time, because they had a bunch of songs they were sitting on. To, you know, kind of put them out. They ended up not doing other splits, did they? I can't remember
now. I don't think so. I think after that they did that like remix thing, mm-hmm. that they ended up putting out.
It's an interesting way to put out songs, do splits with other bands. If you have like an album's worth of songs, would it be more beneficial to do like, you know, 6 splits or just release an album?
Their logic behind it was that if you do the split and you get it pressed or whatever, it's just one smaller release that will sell a bunch, mm-hmm. you know, and it just, that band is pretty much their livelihood for the most part. So, you know, they obviously want to do what they can do to sell as many physical units as possible.
Right.
So
they're also like way ahead of most bands in how they do things. Like they really follow no formula. And that's like super influential to like us, even, you know, they just do whatever they want all the time.
Yeah, they've been pretty progressive over the years about
their
releases and just work and how they work and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Even their even the bands that they get lumped in with, I've always just even their style of music has always just like been set apart from everything that they've ever done in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Like, stylistically, I can't think of a band that sounds like them, you know?
Yeah, I really can't either. They do their own thing.
I can.
Who?
You guys kind of sound like them.
Really?
Like Zaya?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I get like, I call you guys heavier Zayao on the message board.
Wow.
Zayao.
Zayao. Yeah, well, we've never gotten that comparison before, but
you're just heavier.
We wear it.
I mean, like, there's like, I can hear an influence of their music in your version of your music.
Yeah.
It's not like you don't sound like them, but like there's definitely hints of it. You
know, right.
Yeah. They're definitely heavy as fuck. They got melodic stuff. They got, you know, sludgy shit. So
yeah, they're all over the map.
They're awesome, man.
Yeah, listening to them. We try to focus on the freedom of it all too. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of bleeds over into what they do as well. Mm-hmm. When we're writing, for sure. Just not really thinking of any blueprint of any sort, you know?
No, I get it, but it's just like, I guess because you guys have grown up, like you said, since you were like 9.
Yeah.
Listening to it, obviously it's going to be in
bleeds in.
Something that you do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's burnt in.
So yeah, let's talk about, you know, you and who you are, since JP texted me that we probably should have you guys introduce yourselves.
Okay.
You know, it's rusty. We're rusty. We haven't done the in-person thing in a little bit. So.
That's all right.
Anyway, Luke, go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll go to Dylan.
Hey, I'm Luke. I play bass and do vocals in Yashira.
I'm Dylan. I play guitar and do vocals in Yashira.
Yeah, that's probably why it sounds like, you know, Zayo. A little bit. He's grown up listening to it since he was 9.
Yep.
It's probably a little bit of that toxic in there, too, but we won't.
Right, yeah.
Love Britney Spears.
No, that was 8 years old, man. That wasn't 9.
That's crazy. You guys are pretty Duval podcast, that's for sure. Got you guys from here.
Go Jags.
Yeah. We're shout right down Duval. The street from the stadium. And I got the Limp Bizkit shirt on.
Yes.
Yes, siree.
Sure do. Yeah.
Making it happen, Cap'n. So like let's talk about you guys' like influences as like growing up, because you guys are a little younger as well. Yeah, like so who got you into like music in general? Like as far as like what was the band that made you go like, oh yeah, I want to be in a band?
My answer is so Duval.
Evergreen?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Like they did the thing that I knew right then and there that I wanted to do, you know? Mm-hmm. I think the first song I heard from them was I'm super thirsty. I think the first song I ever heard from them was their Zero cover.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
That whole cover album is pretty dope, dude.
But I had never heard Smashing Pumpkins version at that point.
That's fine.
So no, I thought it was just their song. And I was like, man, this song is awesome.
Dude, when was that in their time? When was that cover album out?
Dude, that must have been like 2003 or something.
No.
Like that.
No, it's later than that.
Later than that.
It came after
because they were like one of the first like first scene shows you ever went to.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say one of the first ones I ever went to, Evergreen was on. It was like Strife and Poison the Well.
Wow.
Damn.
Freebird.
That's a gig.
Yeah. And they were one of the first, I want to say either the first hardcore show or one of the first, but then I just started going to all their shows around town because they were local.
Mm-hmm.
That was such a fucking cool time too. They were such a cool band.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still a cool band.
Yeah,
but they were such a cool band back then because it was so like the scene was so new at the time, mm-hmm. especially locally.
Mm-hmm.
You guys would have flourished a lot better, I think, back then as a band than probably currently, because the scene just kind of goes in ebbs and flows, and I think that was a high point.
I agree. I think Jacksonville's scene is strange. It at this particular point, it seems kind of more divided than it's ever been since I've been a part of it. It seems like. It's like I'm almost like clicky. Like these people go to these shows. That's it. Whereas back in the day, it seemed like it was there's a show at this venue. You're going. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who's playing. You know.
I'm trying to remember. It was pretty clicky back in the day too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I phrased it wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know right now since there just aren't any shows.
Well,
you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to know how people are going to act when shit does get back to normal.
You know? They may just go to shows just to go to shows. It might not matter who's going.
Or there might not be any venues left, you know?
True. That's also an issue. Yeah.
I definitely feel that way. I think that when they come back, that it's just going to be full support.
Like a flood, opening of the floodgates.
Exactly, yeah. Just excited to have a show in general.
I do think that when things do get back to normal, it might skew from more venue or like bar shows to, you know, more DIY focused shows, kind of like it used to be, like with all the house shows we used to do and like all that shit. I think all that's going to come back. Warehouse shows are probably going to come back.
Just more underground.
More underground. Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, shit that's not at a bar or at a venue.
Right.
Because those spots, I mean, bars are doing fine now, but like actual music venues are, you know, suffering right now. So it's like, you see a new one closing down like every week, you know, a good venue like Voltage Lounge. They just shut down. That's crazy.
That place was awesome. That place was so cool.
That place is awesome. And yeah, it's just like, it's crazy. You never know like what's going to happen, you know, when it does get back to normal. It's easy to speculate on what could happen though.
It'd be cool if the underground shows do start happening. I mean, I don't want to say that I support underground shows going on currently. I'm just saying, like, in general, when things get better, it'd be nice to have that again. Because I think back in the day, like when we were talking off earlier, before the podcast, shows were just different. Like, it was a higher peak, I guess, locally here. I'm being nostalgic about, but there were like a lot of like house shows then and warehouse shows then. It's like, that's kind of like the allure of why I took to the hardcore scene early on.
I agree.
It's because it was like so not mainstream, obviously, at the time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think in the time span between then and like now, at some points, the scene was mainstream. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Certain parts of the scene were mainstream, so it didn't make it as, I don't know, cool feeling, you know, to like be part of something that's not common culture. But
Yeah, kind of like what you said, Jacksonville is, it definitely goes through the ebbs and flows for sure.
Just like all scenes will probably your town or in anyone's town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a lot of the change happens with, you know, the internet age becoming as giant and consuming as it is, you know?
Mm-hmm. True.
You know, like I remember when I first started to go to shows around here, that there'd be people passing out flyers, there'd be flyers hung up all over the city and stuff like that. And now it's just like, hopefully Facebook you got invited to the Facebook invite, you know, and it's, I don't know. I wonder what it would do if the whole city or a whole city would embrace going back to like that kind of grassroots style.
I think you would have to do it as an artist.
That's for sure. But it would have to be embraced by the city in general, because I almost just kind of
flyering. I don't think has ever really been embraced by the city, just because it is polluting and littering.
right.
What I mean? Because like you'll hand out a lot of flyers, and you know
they all get thrown away
before they're like, "Whoop, yep, that's cool."
They'll just toss
it right there. So that's why they don't really like it that much. But I mean, some of the cool things about
airdrop flyers.
We'll just
go to a show and every phone that pops up just airdrop it.
Mm-hmm. You could do that.
That's the green way to do it.
Yeah, totally.
As long as there's no dick pic with it.
You know,
you might get some. You might get some replies back.
Yeah, you're gonna get in a lot of trouble for that for sure.
But if you could do that and start manually, you know, not manually, but physically passing out flyers, and because. I mean, I still have flyers from shows from back in the day, and that becomes like part of a collectible.
Absolutely.
Of the memory, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's more so what I mean, I guess, is like when I say grassroots, like that was like just how you did it back then. There was really nothing else about it, but it seemed to grab more people in some weird way. And I don't really know what, I don't have the answer as to what it is.
They had a human connection with the person that possibly was in the band already. Mm-hmm. So they were like, oh, that guy's kind of cool. I'm sure his band's kind of cool. Rather than just like, I got a random Facebook invite from this dude.
Exactly. This dude that I've never met that just added me, you know?
It is pretty impersonal.
So I think that has a lot to do with it. But also, I mean, it also shows that, you know, there's a hustle aspect to the, your passion with your art and stuff like that. So you're out there willing to meet people face to face to invite them to your show. Like, come see my band.
Yeah, but being that annoying guy that hustles so hard in person is different than being that annoying guy that just sends you a bunch of show invites on Facebook 100%. All the time. You know?
I like that's funny. My favorite move is when they just invite 99, they add 99 people to the post.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
It's like Ray-Bans for sale. Yeah. Tag
99 people in it. Exactly.
I see those all the time.
Yeah. I am Facebook marketing. That's what that is. So anyway, let's pivot back to the new record. 3 years in the making. Was the songs that Seth was on, was that something that, did his parts change, or did you want to keep them as, you know, as they were, and then whatever songs outside of that were free range for the new person?
Ryan, when we got Ryan to come, to agree to come, he lives in Memphis, our drummer. He lives in Memphis, and he played for the band Seraph the Light, and he plays in a band called Autolith, and Seraph the Light did that collab record with Axis, so that's kind of how we got acquainted with Ryan, but when he agreed to do it, all we had from what Seth had written was cell phone recordings of just like voice memos, us turning on the phone to remember what we had done and setting it down in the middle of the room. So a lot of it had to get changed just based off of the fact that he couldn't even hear what Seth was actually even doing because it was just so rough. Blown out, you know? Yeah, yeah. So yeah, a lot of it is rewritten.
Their styles are pretty different too. So naturally he was going to play things a little bit different than Seth. So yeah, he kind of got it to his comfort level and then just took off with it basically.
Okay. Yeah.
Like went super hard.
Yeah. He
did it change the song at all? Like, did you guys get fresh ideas and alter some of the established songs because of the style?
I would say that it, the whole experience of losing Seth and like trying to revive the record that we had written with him helped us make the whole thing as cohesive as possible. Like, because we rewrote parts that we were just like, oh, well, this sounds like a totally different band, you know, because we were just very similar to how we were writing Shrine. We were just kind of throwing stuff out there, didn't really care about its cohesion with the last one that we wrote. It's just like, oh fuck, that was sick, you know, like we got to do it, you know?
Yeah. Cause we had plans for the future. We were like, yeah, like it doesn't, this record doesn't really matter as much. Cause the second or third album is going to be way sicker.
Yeah. You
know? Let's just throw a filler album out.
Yeah, literally.
Pretty much. Yeah. It was like, we'll figure some stuff out on the next one, you know? But then obviously like those conversations turn into like, how can we continue basically when your drummer passes away? So it's like, you know, it's not something that you can force. You got to kind of just feel it out, you know, what seems like the right thing to do and, go that route. But also you got to be patient with it. And you know, That was the hardest lesson of all, was just being patient with the whole process of the album coming together. Because like you said, we had a bunch of ideas already down, but nothing was concrete. So when Ryan comes in, you know, he comes to town for a couple days at a time, usually 3 or 4 days. So when he does that, we pretty much just sit in our jam spot and just crank out the jams and just try to like... well, we don't do this currently, but when we were writing the album, you know, we would just try to, you know, just get the songs to where they can just be, I don't know, not even like accepted, but they can feel the same as each other, basically. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big part of what Ryan was helping us do, and he took off with it. Yeah,
a big thing that made it as seem so seamless for us was that Ryan was like the perfect fit, and he was also the first person that we tried out. So like we knew that we were going to have to get somebody that like got it, like understood what we were trying to do, you know, and like listened to the same style of music and understood the style of music. And, but yeah, when he came there and we started going over it and just seeing his overall skill, cause in Seraph and Autolith, like he gets a little wacky, but when you were able to like see what he was like, he like put the pedal to the floor and we were like, yeah, like this is the guy, you know, we knew it like immediately. Mm-hmm. And, that definitely helped, because going into that, we didn't know how it was going to go.
Yeah. It was very, very uncertain times.
Well, yeah, you guys, I was going to say, cause you were talking about being patient and whatnot with everything. It felt, I mean, I could be remembering this completely wrong too, but it felt like you guys, how long was it before you started even trying people out?
It was,
I feel like
it's probably about like 5 months.
Yeah. It was a while before you guys even started doing anything.
Yeah. I mean, we had started talking to potential drummers that we thought could handle it. You know,
we only talked to one other one. It was two. We talked to Hosian from Vatican.
Yeah. Hosian and, Tommy.
Oh yeah. We did discuss it with Tommy for a little bit too.
Yeah. That couldn't work out. We wanted to get Tommy from Axis. But then, and Hosian, but we just realized that it couldn't work out with either of them. And
just because of, they're so busy with their other things,
right.
You know, and we wanted somebody that wasn't going to be like, that was going to be able to kind of focus on it, you know?
Right.
And also not wanting to disrupt their
exactly.
awesome bands, you know? Ryan's in awesome bands as well, but they're not like super, super active. They don't tour and stuff like
right.
that. So it was, felt like a easier grab to get Ryan. And
he just fit better.
And yeah, well, yeah, we'll never know what would have been, you know, if we tried out other drummers, but he fit perfectly, like a glove. Like
yeah.
A glove.
It was at the point where we didn't need to try anybody out. We tried him out and we're like, yeah, okay. Let's go. Let's move.
How'd that process go? Did you send him just like backing tracks and then he just wrote something to it, or did he do some
cell phone recordings?
Yeah,
voice memos.
He had the cell phone recordings and he would just listen to those, not really like able to play along with them too much, you know. But he would just become familiarized with the songs, and then when he showed up for the very first time, it was like him playing the songs for the first time. And we didn't even try to tackle any of the old music at all. Like he's still, I don't know if he's learned any of the old music, but it doesn't really matter.
There's no pressing moment right now for you to rock that out on stage or anything like that. So
that would be the only reason for him to learn it. So
yeah, but even with Seth, we were still looking to like kind of move on from that stuff anyway, because we have our feelings about Shrine. We just felt like it was a very young record.
So what's the newer songs that you have out, which, by the way, your new single is on the Lamb Goat New Metal Monthly playlist.
Consume.
So go check that out. I think it's one of the top songs, first songs.
Oh, yeah. Nice. It's awesome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Like you're
that bad boy. Anyway, it's a much different depart from your last couple things that I had heard from you guys. You know, even different, you know, than the Zayao split and stuff like that. So. Mm.
Less
more aggressive,
mm-hmm. overall, I'd say, but less death metal thrown in there for no reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or like random black metal parts.
Yeah.
We don't really have too many of those anymore.
Like we just,
was that a conscious effort or were you just like,
it really was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
so
like,
what made you write it in the beginning then?
Just man, we were just trying to figure out what we were doing. Like, really, like we didn't.
And was Shrine your first release with Good Fight?
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay,
we had a two song 10-inch that we put out prior to that. That came out on Southern Druid out of Jacksonville.
Those were the first two songs we ever wrote together.
Yes, yeah. That was the very first thing we ever wrote, and that has more of like the random black metal stuff. There's not too much of it on Shrine. But yeah, there's some,
there.
But yeah, we were pretty much just like, kind of want to work it into an area that is more fresh, I guess.
Really, we just wanted to take another step at... It's so hard to find your sound.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like everybody has their... follows some kind of formula to having a sound. Mm-hmm. And that was... Us getting away from that, I think, was a big proponent in us being able to take steps towards finding that sound. Like, I still think you can hear our, like, influences in our music. I'm not mm-hmm. trying to sit here and be like, oh, you know, like, we just sound like us, yeah. you know? But we want to. And getting away from the, dude, that's very Morbid Angel, man. Like, you know, that's
yeah, but, you know, super also, Gorguts. People who listen to Morbid Angel, everything that they write is going to have a little bit of Morbid Angel in there.
Yeah.
Regardless. And there are bands that Morbid Angel sound like. Jeez. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure.
That they listen to, that we're influenced, you know, I mean, how influences go. So it's going to happen. But
yeah. And this is not to say that we won't ever touch on it again.
Yeah. Oh. Did you just, like, mm-hmm. want to be heavier? Like, what caused you to step away from, just not to be more sporadic or just to be more well thought out as far as
yeah,
the music
more
is
thought
going?
Put into it pretty much.
Exactly.
Like,
just more cohesion.
Just not taking the song, like, shitting out the songs, taking them and being like, okay, let's press this on vinyl. You know, like, actually, you know, putting a little bit more thought into arranging the songs and making one riff flow into the other and making the lyrics meaningful and not just random.
Right.
And yeah, so just putting more intention actually into it rather than just, you know, putting it down and then walking away from it, never revisiting it, and mm-hmm. just pretty much just writing songs to play them live, basically.
Right,
you
calling know? It done when it probably isn't done.
Exactly. And yeah. that's mostly what Shrine was for us. Like, we listen to Shrine now, and we're like, man, it seems like we wrote it, like, way longer ago than it was, just because it seems like so young, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't even know a better word to use than young. It just... We were still at the very, very early stages of this band, mm-hmm. had no real idea what we wanted to do. We were just mm-hmm. getting together and shitting it out.
Yeah. Shitting it out.
Shitting it out, man.
I mean, at the end of the day, we are still a young band, you know? Like, we've only been a band for 5 years. So
and a little bit of that was on hold, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was pretty much nothing. So, well, yeah, I guess, you know, for about a six-month period, we were pretty much doing nothing. But so 4.5 years or so we've been a band, and yeah, it's just, I don't know. I'm trying to remember where I was going with that now.
Well, Shrine was written. We started writing Shrine right after we put out our first demo.
Oh,
so
I know what I was
that was
say.
Like the first 2 years of us being a band.
Right.
So this stuff is like,
that was young. We're still young. I feel like, you know, this record that we're about to put out is not the end all be all. It's probably not the best thing we'll ever write, but it is
honest.
Yeah, it's honest, and it's I feel like our path is very clear now. And I think that people that appreciated us for everything we have done previously will definitely connect with this one on a different level. I know we do. I know this is a record that I can listen to constantly and not get sick of it, and I've never been in a band where I can just, like, listen to my own songs, like, through.
Yeah,
I'm just excited to see what comes next, because we're
that third record's gonna be a banger.
Yeah, third record.
We're already looking forward.
Yeah, start enjoying the road to the fourth record.
Yeah,
that one's gonna be the one.
Yeah, that's now, how we used to think.
Yeah,
not even kidding.
Yeah,
we'll just, like, shit these out, you know.
Yeah, just shit it out, man.
Shit it out.
Now, we have new music in the works, so it's, like, super exciting to think about all that stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, like, now that you had... I was also referring to, like, this COVID time as having some extra downtime, mm-hmm. as being, you know, a young band, too. Like, you know, this year has been put out, or, you know, you may have done, like, some things in the first 2 months or whatever, mm-hmm. kind of, but, like, then you haven't done anything since then. So
pretty much.
You've had extra time, so obviously... did you guys push back the release of this record because of it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It was so, like, how long has this record been finished for?
We finished it in the end of February.
I think we got the final back in like April or maybe May.
I think the idea was to put it out in July. Yeah, because we were planning a tour in August.
Yeah.
Like we were starting to book a tour in August when like everything started to shut down. Mm-hmm. But I remember thinking like when the shutdown started to happen that I was just kind of like, okay.
By August, it'll be all good.
Yeah. By August, we'll be fine, you know? And so, August,
I think
July.
We actually ended up like canceling all the effort on the tour within like 2 or 3 weeks of the coronavirus thing like really taking hold, you know? So, yeah.
We were in Connecticut when it hit the U.S.
Yeah.
I remember like the news. Like, I mean, we were like in a room with just us barely ever leaving, you know? But, man, what a crazy, crazy thing to look back on. That seems like it was so long ago.
It does, yeah.
I mean, it was kind of long ago. It's like, you know.
Well, yeah, but it feels like 2 years ago.
Yeah, it feels insane. It feels like forever ago, for sure. Well,
time's passing a little slower or faster sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it moves rapidly and slowly at the same time. It's fucking weird. But, Connecticut was very fun. Beautiful, beautiful state, you know.
Yeah, working with Greg and Chris taught us so much about being a band.
What was that, where you recorded the album?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we recorded at Silver Bullet Studios in, what is it, Birmingham, Connecticut.
No, Burlington.
Burlington, Burlington.
Birmingham,
Alabama. Nah,
I was thinking
Burlington, Connecticut.
I mean, is there a Birmingham, Connecticut?
There might be.
So sorry, Greg, so sorry. But yeah, they challenged us. Mm-hmm. Challenged us in a way that we've never been challenged. They put Ryan to the test, and that was also helpful for us, just based off
really
of,
break him in. You know what I mean?
Really? Yeah. Dude, he worked on drums for like 8 days.
Yeah.
I bet he was something like I that. Bet he was so over it, dude.
Oh, no doubt. But
once he was done, he just played Halo for the rest of the time.
Yeah, he's like, fuck y'all have fun. Yeah. And I'm sure like that his job is first up.
Yep.
Most times. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, he was just like, good luck. 8 days doing drums, that'd be brutal.
Yeah. And we,
how many songs were on the album?
Nine.
Nine?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Which, by the way, you can pre order your bundle still, probably.
You can make your own bundle.
Make your own bundle?
Make your own bundle.
Do you still get a discount? Is there a discount?
I don't know. Discount.
I think I got like a Black notification for like,
yeah,
I think doing some make your own bundle discount.
Yeah.
That might have been like a Black Friday sales type deal. I don't know if that's still going on or not. Probably but pre-order not. It anyway, even if there isn't a discount.
Do you guys work with Carl directly?
Sometimes,
not really super directly.
Mostly Rick. Cool. We mostly work with Rick. Rick is
like,
awesome.
What's it like working with Carl? Because you know he was Ferret for a long time.
Working with Carl we interact mostly with Rick, but working with Carl is great too. Like, it's not like we don't ever talk to him, you know?
Yeah. He was really there for us when Seth passed too. Mm-hmm. So that was really awesome. It, you know, just showed that he cared. He came down and hung out with us and shit.
Yeah, what a strange thing to have to deal with as a band and just as a manager kind of situation. You know, it's just like, whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was crazy, man. Seriously.
Yeah, those are things you don't plan for.
But, yeah. We were riding the wait the night that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Truly insane.
Third song on the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that song, it's like a very heavy, hard-hitting song. Lyrically, meaning-wise, it's a good one. Probably my favorite song on the record, just because everything that went into it. Like you said, we had just started writing that on that night, so... That was, that's a really good song. That was good to get it out and, like, get it into a form that sounds, like, fucking awesome. And then, like, and then just be able to, like, listen back on it. I don't know. It's
very helpful.
Cool preview of the third record.
Yeah. I think we were all just, like, super stoked to finish it up and be like, yeah, Seth would like this. He would have liked where this went, you know, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's dope. It's dope. But, yeah, Carl's the man. Rick's the man.
Yeah, Ferret was just like such a influential early independent label, you know, especially for the scene.
Man, they have so many great releases too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Between them and between them, Solid State, Equal Vision, Trustkill. Those were like, good Lord. And there's, I'm missing a bunch of other labels too that people are probably freaking out about. But
right.
Like, to me,
they'll let you know on the forum.
Yeah, for sure. But to me, those were like my four, you know, indie labels at the time that I was just like so about. I mean, Victory too, but they were huge for an indie label.
Yeah. Yeah. Ferret was probably my biggest one for sure. Yeah.
Every time I die, bro.
Every time. Yeah, yeah, man. I mean,
they even did
Timeless
Poison
Band.
The Well. They even did Poison the Well later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Versions was on.
Was it?
Was on Ferret, yeah.
I think that record is severely underrated.
Of course, yeah. We've discussed this on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. That record is severely underrated and Tropic Rot.
I think I underrate Tropic Rot currently.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I think that record.
When I'm listening to Poison Well on Shuffle sometimes, I'll be like, damn, this song bangs. And I'll look, it's like, oh, it's Tropic Rot. Mm. That's why, you know, because it's like, damn, I don't think I've heard this one. But
so you're choosing to underrate it at this point because
yeah,
you like
dude,
it when
so
you don't
much,
know.
There's so much to listen to.
There's yeah, a lot, there's a man. Lot. There's
just
a lot
so much. That's like I was thinking about it the other day. It was like it was cool when like you know the you were being told what to listen to kind of, but now that you have the ability to find any and everything, mm-hmm. and anyone can make anything and everything and put it out on whatever platform.
Yeah,
true.
So now you have so much. It's like I tried to do what my top. My top 20 albums of 2020 would be, you know what I mean?
You already did that, man?
No.
Come on, bro.
I started listening to like all the releases that would come out, you know, through Lamb, like if we were posting about it or whatever. So I tried to do that. Even with the coronavirus going on and having all that extra free time, it became just like so hard to do.
Because there's so many bands putting out so many records.
Yeah.
It's crazy. That's all anybody's doing because nobody's touring anymore.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but like there's so many, you know, there's... Just and let's just think about like just this bubble that we're in, like that Lamb Goat music would be what we would cover. There's so much fucking, there's different levels of bands releasing all sorts of shit. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I don't, when the releases come out, I don't know how established a band may be or may not be. So here I am just like listening and I'm trying to like actually be like, you know, and a lot of it's just like instantly not going to like.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Lamb Goat's awesome because they do report on, you know, smaller bands. We had Lamb Goat write-ups like a year or two into being a band. So that was awesome. But I can imagine like if you
gave up on that, by the way, like 5 months in.
What's that?
What, writing?
No.
Oh.
Checking out every album. That
came out. Oh, okay. Yeah,
like,
I was like, wait,
like
what?
Fuck that, dude.
I can imagine if you have like... If you're behind the scenes and you have like a list of all the fucking releases, it's probably so overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know?
I was trying to do it for Twitter clout and shit. And it was like, no, dude, I'm not, I don't have fucking
clout's not worth it.
Yeah.
It was not.
It's really not. It's really not. Yeah. But
I'm trying to tell you like the first quarter albums that are pretty dope, you know?
Yeah.
I know those.
Well, the last quarter album, dude, first of all, ours, but you need to check out Crypto Deers too. They're our label mates. They just put theirs out on Friday. That's a good one.
Crypto Deer?
Crypto Deer, yep. Yep. The record is called The Angel of History. Mm-hmm. Yep. Super good. Anyway,
what would you call them? What style would they be in?
Prog metal.
Prog, nice. For sure.
And man, are they prog.
What would you guys call progressive. What would you guys call Yashiras?
Oh my gosh. We've never been able to answer this question.
Just call us like a, I don't know, like a metal band.
Yeah, we like to touch on... like so many different things, it's hard to say. So we just say we're in a metal band. But
yeah, if we were trying to be like super specific, I guess post metal sludge.
Yeah,
yeah. I was gonna say there is like a sludge aspect to it, but it's not like sludge.
Yeah, we whatever earlier Mastodon mixed with like a Neurosis and Converges.
Yeah. I was gonna say there's like a Converge aspect to it for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, we got fast parts and stuff. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throw some Cult of Luna in there.
Yeah, there's some of that.
It's
in there.
There. Isis.
A little bit of Evergreen.
Isis the band.
Isis the band.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, a little bit of Evergreen. Do we have any Evergreen?
I'm sure it's.
I mean,
it's
just,
probably in there.
Just
somewhere.
Based off of what?
A little bit of Zero by Evergreen?
Yeah. Yeah. The song Zero by the band Evergreen Terrace.
They were supposed to be our third episode, and we did the episode, but we just couldn't put it out.
Really?
No.
Yeah, it was a great time.
Was it with Craig?
It was with everybody.
Oh wow!
So that was when we found out, like, okay, can't do a full band.
Yeah.
Oh god.
This is max right here. Three people talking. That is max.
Oh
like,
yeah.
that they would have side conversations within each other, right? Because there's like, and it was just, how many, were they all on the same couch? They were all on like a couch or something, or how the room was so.
Two of them were sitting on the arms of the couch.
Yeah, we had to like expand the room, and we had to get extra mics, or they were sharing a mic or something like that. But
nice.
I can only imagine how that went based off of how long they've been a band and all the things that they've done. That the experience.
Dude, some of them are like hilarious. Like Jason's fucking hilarious. Craig's hilarious.
Oh, for sure.
All, and like Andrew's hilarious. But they're all like, awesome. They're all fucking.
They're all awesome people, but I bet you that would be a headache. For sure.
Yeah, this is like a joke. They're kind of like the local E-Tid band, you know? They're all jokesters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure. Man.
Love E-Tid. We were actually just talking about them. Like, that band will never get old. Like, they're timeless. They're so
what do you think? What do you think allows them to maintain? Yeah, because they're like, I talk about it all the time on the podcast, that they're just one of the bands that were able to like not fall off.
They have the formula.
Like during any lull in popularity of like heavy music or whatever, mm-hmm. and they're still fucking they still kill it. Like they still have a diehard fan base from back in the day, mm-hmm. and they keep gaining a fan base as they go.
First and foremost, I think their music speaks for them, you know, perfectly. Like they are fucking gnarly dudes. They're funny. They don't take themselves too seriously. But then when it gets down to it, like their music is meaningful, you know. So it's just.
You know, they also don't box themselves in
that's
to true. Anything like in terms of bands that they tour with or their styles. Like you can listen through an Every Time I Die record and hear different styles mm-hmm. of songwriting mm-hmm. throughout the whole thing. And I just think that keeps everybody interested.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't want the same thing over and over again.
Right.
I mean, some people do.
They all they do. It's so weird. They're like a band that does kind of evolve their sound, but they do kind of sound like they used to. You know, mm-hmm. they have like a sound, but it's also maybe they just have like a way of writing songs and a style, like a guitar style
mm-hmm.
that is memorable.
And Keith's vocals are really, you know, notable.
There's not a band out there.
You can always recognize him.
I don't love everybody in the band like Every Time I Die. Yeah. Everyone is such a fucking character in that band. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and now Andy's doing like his whole fucking thing with like getting AEW. Massive popular on mm-hmm. fucking wrestling and stuff.
He's AEW, like, man. That's a Jacksonville TNT. Jaguars plug.
Yeah.
Go Jags.
Tony Shad. Or Tony Khan.
Tony Khan?
Tony Shad.
That's his wrestling name.
Yeah. Tony Khan, man. Yeah, our drummer.
Well, at least that's going well for them.
Our drummer is super into wrestling. He like tells us to get into AEW all the time, but I'm not gonna front. I'm not
into wrestling.
No,
the Minefield.
It's fun as fuck.
The Minefield
dude.
Dudes are into wrestling.
Yes, mm-hmm. they are super into it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, it's entertaining, man. It really is. Some people do it better than others, for sure.
Well, Andy is definitely an entertainer, and I mean, I guess a lot of that you can add, you know, attributes from him being on stage and entertaining
mm-hmm.
For so many years on. Stage with the band, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and Every Time I Die is a different level of entertainment as well. Like
they're so crazy live.
They are absolutely.
You know, at some point it's
going
to be interesting to see them as an older band.
Yeah, you but know? I also feel like there will be a band until they're super old.
Oh yeah, I think Jordan's going to be like the AC/DC guy, Angus Young. You know?
Yeah,
Jordan's going to be that because like
doing the duck walk.
Yeah.
Or his version of the duck walk thing. You
just
know?
Jumping off shit at 65.
He posts pictures of him like just throwing himself. I mean, he throws himself into the performance and music and shit. But like that can't be good on his neck. Can't be good on his back. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do 20 years from now.
I'm 26. Act less a fool than them at shows. Mm-hmm. And I'm in pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can only imagine how that goes on tour. Do that every night.
That band is pretty fucking awesome. What's your favorite...
Oh boy, that's a hard question, man.
New Junk, probably.
Yeah, that probably is mine too. I'm a sucker for Gutter Phenomenon.
Gutter is
Bored Stiff might be my favorite song by them.
Oh really?
I think so, dude. That is a fucking awesome song.
The Bored Stiff Warped Tour Circle Pit video, dude.
Won you over?
Yeah, I mean honestly,
You guys are much younger, so I would assume that you're. Favorite would have been in that or later part of their discography.
That was the first stuff I had heard was Gutter Phenomenon. But in terms of like overall best record that it seems like they've written front to back to me, it's New Junk.
Yeah. That's the one that made me really fall in love with them.
I'm trying to remember what's on that particular one.
The big single from that.
Huh? Roman Holiday?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was on that. Yep. Marvelous Slut.
White okay, Smoke. Yeah.
Yeah, the big single from it, I think, was Wanderlust.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, yes. So, yeah. There's so many songs that, I mean, I don't... They I was trying to shuffle dude. And shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, Werewolf was definitely a good one. Mm. That was my favorite on that album. But I get the that big one mixed dirty. Up with...
yeah, that was Big Dirty.
Big Dirty. And what's the one with Organ Grinder? Is that the one?
That Organ Grinder is on New Junk,
yeah,
New I Junk. Think.
Yeah, that's the one where the fucking... Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then X Lives was after that one. That one was amazing.
That rolled.
I probably didn't listen to that one as much, and I probably didn't listen to Low Teens as much as I probably should have either.
Dude.
But Low I do Teens love like the good. Singles off of both those albums. I mm-hmm. love the singles that are put on. But like he also got into Every Time I Die Late too, JP. Mm-hmm. So like I was telling him like, dude, the record you fucking need to listen to is Hot Damn. Because like I listened to them mm-hmm. when they were like early on. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't for the first record, I don't think I was around, but like I did listen to like Jimmy Tango's Method and fucking all those way early songs. That shit was just so crazy because it was like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know? And then they had a version of that Southern rock kind of party metal hardcore shit that was just with Hot Damn. Mm-hmm. That was crazy.
But they transcended all that though. Yeah, yeah, right. So yeah, crazy. Sure.
And insane. Then now they just I don't know. They keep cranking. I don't know. They keep cranking that
seriously.
Shit
seriously. I feel the same.
There's not really a bad song, and you can like follow that band anywhere they go, and you're still going to enjoy it.
Yeah,
yeah. They will always deliver, no matter what.
Is that like, what the plan for Yashir is? You know, just to not be boxed in and just you know go all over.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you guys have short, a plan short in answer? Because like you obviously were thinking early on that like fuck it, the third record and the fourth record, those are gonna be bangers.
That was always Seth's thing. He would always say shit like that.
He'd always be like, this is fine for this record, we yeah. don't have to do stuff like this on the second.
Yeah.
And it's like what you doing? Know yeah. like
that guitar riff is so first record, bro.
Yeah, yeah dude, like kind of goofy shit like that. Yeah. And he'd like say so things funny. Like yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see where the band's at in 5 years, you know? Like, are we still, like, writing good music? Or, like, yeah. just thinking about breaking up in 5 years, like, yeah. at the beginning of the band. It's like...
Yeah. He had...
like, goofy shit.
He was very farsighted. I'm a little nearsighted. And my... I don't know. My expectations don't extend beyond, you know, the next couple hours or possibly a day or two. So, very hard for me to be like... Yeah. Yeah, I wonder, you know, I wonder what the third album is going to be like. I don't know. You know, it's like, I never have thought super, super in those terms. Like,
we would all just think that shit was so goofy when he would say it. We'd all just like laugh. We're like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? Like, like live in the now, man, please.
So you guys don't have like a, I mean, do you have goals as like a band? Because obviously like you got signed earlier on.
Yeah.
So you are kind of somewhat established with like at least a decent group of people around you. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, yeah, I didn't know if you had like goals to fucking be this.
Yeah, a goal would be to get to a point where we can play live. I'd say that's probably like an immediate goal, because right now, I mean,
are you guys doing live stream anything? Are you guys talk about that
we want to
fight and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in talks about that, like discussing it.
Mm-hmm.
You guys should do a I don't know if you can do this with short notice, but like, you know, when the record comes out on Friday, you should do a listening party on your Facebook or some shit.
Oh, on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, we were gonna do, we were talking about if cases, like if things had died down, which they didn't and they never even came close, that we were gonna do a listening party at our friend's bar, like around locally, but that literally at the Flamingo. In Murray Hill, yeah. But that obviously didn't even come close
didn't
to happening.
Work out.
So. But yeah, I mean, short-term goal would be playing a show, you know, like playing live.
Yeah, everyone's short-term goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long-term goal, I just think I've always said to them to just sustain.
Yeah.
I just want the band to just be able to be alive, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? To be able to play, to be able to write, and, you know, if that means taking a break from touring to save money, because we all work jobs, you know, obviously our band doesn't pay for literally anything that we do.
We pay that. We put money in.
Yes, exactly. But that's never taken away from it. And yeah, we could stay on this path forever, and I'd be fine with writing music with them.
Yeah, you know? For sure. It'd be good to just not be a band that comes and goes, because there's so many fucking bands like that that are awesome, and then they just, like, break up, or they never do anything else.
Well, I mean, I guess you guys did. You guys have overcome a pretty big fucking obstacle, you know, fairly.
Not, that's how it feels. Easily, yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
You guys definitely have already kind of crossed over one of the worst things that can happen to a band.
Yeah. Probably worst case scenario situation. You know, fingers crossed nothing that bad happens again. But, you know, if it does, you know, that's just one of the things that we'll cross when we get to it. But, yeah, I do feel like, you know, the way that we handled everything and the way that we're coming out on the other side, it says a lot.
Feels so, like we climbed a mountain, yeah. Honestly, to just – for this record to drop on Friday, it just – I can't really put into words what it feels like to get it here, to be at this point,
yeah,
from where we were literally this time 2 years ago. That's like
crazy.
It's just crazy to think about. But yeah, yeah. Goals.
Yeah, I mean, if we could just sustain, have, you know, a decent following in 5 to 10 years, you know, that'd be great. I feel like our following right now is pretty solid. Like, people are already, like, dedicated to us just from, you know, our other releases. And
are you afraid that because you might not be sounding, you might not have the same record, that some of those people may not follow you to the new record?
You're always going to have people that are like, I love their first album so much more, you know.
Yeah. I only like their demo.
Yeah, we've already gotten a couple of those, but it is what it is, you know. We're not really concerned about losing any supporters or anything like that. Like, it's like, sky's kind of the limit, you know. I feel like with the amount that we gain from putting this album out, probably the people that we lose from putting it out, I don't know, it probably won't really matter.
We've also never been a band we've never been a band that was writing music to be like, oh, well, would the crowd like this?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Well, should we enter a nice moshy riff
here? Yeah, no, we straight up, we'll write our sets how we want to play them, not concerned how anybody else is going to feel about anything. So
it's always been like that.
It's always been that way, and it's going to remain that way. We're just that way musically, I think.
When shows get back to going and everything like that, do you guys take any time, since you're putting more thought into your music side of things and writing it and making sure it's perfected over time rather than just shitting it and ripping it out?
Shitting and ripping it.
Shit it out.
Do you guys put any effort or thought into your live visual aspect of your show, or do you not have the budget for that kind of thing?
We are going to try and do a little more now.
Right now, but nothing like that is even on the table, just because, you know, we don't even know what we have to work with, you know. Like, we don't know if when shit gets back, if we're going to be playing, you know, the Rain Dogs or the Daily's place. We're not, you know, we're not playing Daily's, but I'm just saying. Like,
you could be the opener of, you know, a cool show.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, we just don't know.
Open for Post Malone at Daily's place.
That'd be awesome, dude.
I did see that show.
Did you? Yeah, I love Post Malone.
When he came earlier on, not like recently.
Yeah, I don't know. Live, like Luke said, we're just not really thinking about it because it's not even close to being available, you know?
Whatever.
Yeah.
I was super bummed that Furnace Fest got canceled. I didn't like we all thought it wasn't going to be a long term fucking thing.
Yeah,
and like they held out for a long time, you know, without canceling, and then they did.
I was like, that was a lineup, dude. That was a crazy ass lineup.
Yeah,
I don't even remember who was on it.
Converge. I mean,
everybody.
Converge was playing this year's fest. They were supposed to.
Furnace Fest.
Yeah.
Oh, Furnace Fest. Fest, like Gainesville Fest. Yeah. Excuse me.
That was going to be a good one, too. I think there were a couple people that Comeback Kid was going to that, and I was going to be stoked on that.
But, that Furnace Fest thing was wacky. That was bonkers, dude. I was like, every time they would announce a band, I'd be like, how the fuck are they paying all these bands?
Yeah, right. Like that band's still around?
some of them aren't.
Yeah.
And they were coming back. Yeah.
Insane.
I remember some of the other ones.
Zayao.
Yeah, I know they were on it.
Converge was on it. Poison the Well, I think, was going to play. Poison
the Well. End was on it.
End was on it.
Yeah, they were a new band. Knock Loose was on there. Knock Loose, a new band. Yeah. Counterparts was on there as a new band. Every Time That was on there. Not as a new band. But basically, like, anybody that was cool that played Furnace Fest was coming back to play Furnace Fest. I think Andrew WK was going to play Furnace Fest.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Absolutely.
And he was a big part. Like, he had a big moment at Furnace Fest. Yeah.
Yeah, they had... Didn't they have, like, Embodiment or something, like, going to play? Or
they had, like, a bunch of shit.
They had, like, Living Sacrifice coming back. Yeah, and, like, all that kind of shit.
Man, that band is gnarly.
Living Sacrifice was, I think, the first screaming band I ever heard.
Wow.
Popped it in at a Christian bookstore and a little CD thing.
Who was your first screaming band?
Conceived in Fire.
I'm trying to think of what my first screaming band was.
Evergreen?
Are we talking about that, or is that your first heavy band you ever heard? I'm just talking about screaming guys in general.
I think mine was Nirvana, dude.
Well, yeah, I mean, Nirvana screams, Metallica? But yeah. I think we're talking more like...
No, I guess I was asking, like, broader, more broad.
Oh, so you are asking for Nirvana.
Or yeah, fucking, like, James Brown or something like that. Dude.
Get up on that thing!
I guess, yeah, he's a screamer, too.
Yeah!
Yeah, you can just put him on, like, some deathcore kind of fucking backing.
There's probably a YouTube thing made 100%. Of it. Of James Brown's Brown. Vocals over,
you know, one of the good
somebody
things...
making a metal song on Fruity Loops.
If not, they will now. One of the good things I think that came from all the COVID was they did cancel Furnace Fest, which was a bummer, but they also canceled that the other festival that was going on in Orlando, that Rebel Rock Fest, and Biscuit was supposed to play that, and it was like on my birthday, but it's the same weekend as Furnace Fest, so I was going to obviously go to Furnace Fest.
Oh, you had such a hard choice to make.
That was life and death.
What was it going to be, man?
Well, now they rescheduled the Rebel thing.
So you're not going to tell us what the choice was?
Oh, I was going to Furnace Fest. For okay, sure. Okay. There's no way you could miss that.
Come on. He's a real one, dude.
Biscuit, though.
Right?
You got to risk it for the
Biscuit.
Yeah.
Oh!
That's a dope one. But also, the Rage Against the Machine thing got pushed back, so.
Yeah. They'll do it again.
I forgot that was even happening.
I forgot too. Honestly.
I hope a lot of people else do, and they fucking want to sell their tickets so I can get them.
You've seen Limp Bizkit though, haven't you?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I saw him at Rock. Oh, you haven't?
Oh, no, yeah, I did.
Okay, I didn't know if you were.
I got pulled on stage. I got pulled on stage one time when I was at a show, and I sang with them.
Which show?
Like, dude, you're probably like not even old enough to be at the show.
No, I was not there. It's like 2000. Believe it.
It was the old Coliseum. I was 17 years old.
They pulled you on stage to sing a song.
What song? This My matters. Way. My way?
Yeah. What, dude?
Oh, no.
That's sick. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a crazy-ass time.
Man, what a bummer, man.
And so, of course, that also plays into my fandom.
Yeah.
Of the band.
They like, wow. They're like asking you to come onto the stage, and you're like, next song. No.
They,
I don't want to do this
they,
one.
Bunny was a big security guard they had back in the day. He's also been in like a bunch of their videos.
Buddy or Bunny?
Bunny with the
like a rabbit.
Ears. Okay.
And he literally just yoked me out of the crowd. And I thought I was getting kicked out or some shit.
Oh.
And then he just threw me up like a little rag doll onto the stage.
Man. Remember when you saw him? I didn't go, but I saw the video.
Yeah.
Of him bringing his mom on stage.
Dude, that was probably the craziest shit I've ever
And they covered
seen.
Rage.
Yes.
When did you go? Rockville?
It was at Rockville. Yeah. So he like brings his mom on stage right in the middle of them covering Killing in the Name Of. And it's like right before the part where he's like, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. And he like brings his mom up and he's like, ladies and gentlemen, this is my mom.
This is my mom. Yeah. Like that.
And everybody's like, yeah. And he just like starts singing that part. And she's just like dancing.
Weird.
It was fucking weird, bro.
Like, I'm tied with that band in weird ways. Like my babysitter, when I was a young person, was good friends with Wes, and so like he would come over sometimes.
So this is like a deeply rooted fandom.
It's some weird way because the band's local.
Are you from Arlington?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, we probably all kind of crossed. I mean, they were older than I am, but yeah. And then my mom and my grandfather worked with Sam's dad.
Who's Sam?
The bass player.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
So it's like so weird.
Yeah, there are connections all around here with them. My dad used to own a like a car audio joint off, it was in Arlington off Atlantic. And I think somebody from Limp Bizkit, like John Otto or something came in there to get some shit for that, or I really don't remember it. I was literally like seven, so
yeah.
John Otto would be the one that would pimp a car out.
Yeah.
Same deal with Skinner, dude. Everybody's got an uncle that like knows Skinner or like
I went to high school
originally played guitar for Lynyrd Skynyrd or something.
They got a Van Zandt running for like district something out in Clay County.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah, them and the Allman Brothers. The Allman Brothers were here too.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
They got that like random house in Riverside where we were by. We were living closer to at the time when we were doing the podcast. But yeah, there was like a random house that has a plaque out front going like, hey, this is the starting place for the Allman Brothers. And like, you know, you can rent that house and just like live there.
You see people out front like taking pictures of your house.
Yeah, no, people do stop.
There like, she is.
People do stop and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But speaking of house shows earlier on, I wanted to mention, because we had talked about Frail Body already prior to the podcast. But
great,
like,
great band.
We saw them at a house out in the wood room.
Didn't Nick book that show?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember who was supposed to play it. Might have been Umanita Nova.
Yeah, they did play it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, nice, that's right. Nice, okay. Nice. That's yeah, right. That band.
Mm. Yeah, they're dope as shit too.
They're super good.
They're one of the.
I was talking about Frail Body, but also Umanita Nova is yeah.
And Harbor Lights was good too. They played that show, didn't they?
That was like the weirdest fucking dude. I want to talk about that show because I'd like to talk to them about it when we get them on the podcast again. Whenever that fucking
Frail Body happens. Or yeah, Harbor Lights,
Body.
Okay,
Frail Body. And so they're on the podcast, right? And I'm just going to tell the story anyway. So they're on the podcast. And then they go play the show and we go and meet them. And I'm like, I'm trying to be like, hey, let's have a good time. Right. Cause, I don't remember. I don't think they smoked at all. I think they drank with me or whatever, but then we pull up and it's just like a neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a neighborhood.
Where was it in Jacksonville?
Riverside, like a mile from my house. But like, it was like a neighborhood kind of situation. So I was like, oh my God, I didn't know it was like that. Mm-hmm. And I have like a 4-pack of Tall Boys and like a J. So like, I'm smoking out in the street, and then all of a sudden, like I'm already kind of crispy, and then we pull up, and I'm like, this is like a college movie. Like all of a sudden, we've entered some like weird college movie, and like we're at a house show, and it's all these younger people. We're obviously the oldest people there, and then like it's legit like these people just live there, and they're fucking having a house party, and so like. But there's so many people, like, I felt like once we walked in the door, it was like, we are on set now, and there's like, you know, and even the video he shot was very, like, movie-esque, you know, because we recorded the show that night, but that was such a crazy fucking...
Was it just, like, awesome lighting in there, or what?
It was awesome vibes, kind of, I guess, in general, and the lighting was dope, but it's just, like, where they played was, like, a room half this size, you know what I mean? So, like... And you're just like in the kitchen listening to the band in the other room. You know what I mean? And
we played in a basement in Riverside one time.
Yeah.
It was a basement in Riverside?
Dude, there is. It was the hottest show I have ever played by 1,000 miles.
It
doesn't even
like begin to explain how fucking hot it was in there. It was a really, really fun show, though.
Usually the worst shows, the worst environments and stuff like that are always the best shows.
It was with Frameworks.
Mm-hmm. Frameworks.
Yep.
Frameworks and
Marcellus. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a fun show. It was crazy though. Pulling up to the house and just when I pulled up, it was off like Oak Street or something. It was like Rochelle or some shit. And we like pulled up and I was like, no way. Like no freaking way.
Yeah.
And we get down to the basement and I see the basement and feel the heat. No one's down there yet. And I feel the heat and I'm like,
whoops.
Oh no. I was like, man, this is going to be incredibly hot. Like,
which it was.
It felt like you were like cutting through thick air just walking.
Mm-hmm. Just pacing around, getting all in the audio.
That's okay.
What are you doing?
That's okay.
Hot shows are always fun.
Yeah.
They suck at the time, but they're always.
You look like, back memorable. On them with
fondness, I remember, I probably mentioned this on the podcast as well, but like. Evergreen and Every Time I Die played a show around the same time that Hot Damn was coming out. and the AC, someone turned the heat on.
That's just fucked up.
And it
up.
Was in July or something like that. So, like, dude, that show was so fucking
That was
hot.
Here?
Yeah, yeah. It was the Imperial.
Oh, my God, dude.
And someone, and I was wanting to think, I wanted to say it might have been Rock and Roll Pizza at the time or something. And because it was always hotter in there when they were making pizza. But I know they took the pizza stuff out and it was just the Imperial after that. But that show was fucking insanely hot. But I look back on it fondly now because it's like a memorable show. But at the time, it was fucking god awful because it was packed, dude.
Dude. Probably the hottest show besides that house show was that fucking title fight in Touche Amore show at the warehouse.
Unit 6, yeah.
Yeah. Did you go to that one?
Where?
It was at Unit 6.
I don't even know where that is. So
it was not. It's under the Matthews Bridge, legitimately. Like, it's like this, like, it was like this, these steel warehouses.
You know, under the Matthews Bridge?
Yeah.
Not like directly under it, but like pretty you know, much.
It's in that right industrial area under the Matthews Bridge.
We have a little warehouse out there, the Toontown.
Kind of yeah, it's right by there.
Okay,
it's like right across the street from there.
Well, it's off of Wamble. We're gonna have
events in there, so
really,
yeah, eventually we got the city's got to be all like involved, obviously. So we're getting there, or they're getting there, not we are.
You said you're gonna have shows there and stuff.
Yeah. We did have shows back? Before. We did have shows.
What's it called?
Well, it's Toontown. It's just a big, giant, three-sectioned warehouse.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
and nice. It's like a storage warehouse, but it's all like. It's all graffiti on the outside. It's the big graffiti building downtown.
What is that space used for? I've always wondered that.
Nothing.
Just
I mean, like, we were doing events and stuff like that, but the city, you know, it wasn't. They shut us down because it wasn't
up to code, up to or code
and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's got the building getting up to code and stuff like that and adding this, that, and the other, whatever needed to be added and doing all the safety stuff. But, yeah, at some point they're going to do, like, events. And you can hold, like, decent concert-sized bands in there. Yeah. So it's just an additional capacity, you know, like it might fill a cool gap between, like, you know, like, because Underbellies is coming back too, and that's a decent room, so it might be like 1,000 people.
I love that
plus,
room,
you know, venue or whatever. But
yeah, it's good that Underbellies coming back.
Played our second show there, High on Fire and Crowbar. That was a gig, man. That was a freaking gig.
That was a good one.
I remember the Every Time I Die show that was there and the He Is Legend show that was there.
I saw Every Time I Die there, too. I think that was with Ghost Inside and Architects, right?
I don't know. I can't remember. That does not sound right, though.
I saw them there with them. That was definitely them. They headlined it, though.
With Ghost Inside? Oh, dude, I think
it might have just been Architects. But Ghost Inside might have played. But either way, it was E-Tid's show.
They played right when From Parts Unknown.
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah.
Oh man,
that's a record I don't really listen to that often.
It's got
good tracks. That song "More" on it.
Oh yeah,
it's piano. So
heavy, we can't just talk about Every Time I Die on this podcast,
yeah. But we can. But we can, I get what you mean.
We probably shouldn't. Anyway, we've probably gone over an hour. What are we at?
1:10.
Yeah, so we probably should wrap this up. Plus. It's Duval Sunday, and we're 10 minutes away from kickoff.
Oh, I can't wait to watch them lose, man. It's going to be awesome.
Speaking of Frail Body, like I said, fucking Nick hit me up and was all like, they're going to lose today. And I was like, yeah, bro, we know
that. Yeah, of course. And if they don't, we're going to be mad because...
he's a Vikings fan. I should clarify. He's a Vikings fan, and they're playing the Vikings today.
We need a quarterback.
We need a lot of things.
You don't get quarterbacks if you win.
Yeah, we need a lot of things. I don't know what's going on with the team. But anyway.
You, bro.
I'm not even getting into this. I'll get this
is probably not proper podcast topic anyway. That's too Duvalish.
Yeah. Love Jacksonville. Hope the Jags stay in Jacksonville.
Well, we'll see. But anyway, I guess we'll just wrap it up. So yeah, just shout out your record that'll be out the following Friday you're listening to this. But if you aren't, it was December 11th, so go ahead. And any bands that we should probably check out or anything that you want to plug.
Oh, man, that's a long list. So many. Fail to Be, our new record, drops December 11th, Friday after you listen to this. Good Fight Music. Check out Cryptodira, Vatican. Chime in whenever you want.
Axis,
Gouge Away. You already checked out Gouge Away. I don't need to prescribe that to you.
Yeah,
I tried to get them on the podcast.
I didn't think about my shout-outs before we started this. So.
I didn't think
that's
about
why I like
either.
To throw it on you. So it's
there's
like
so
whoever.
Many, dude.
Portrayal of Guilt.
Yeah.
Slow Fire Pistol.
Wreath of Tongues is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a shit ton. In Jacksonville, there's some good bands, too.
Yeah, who
Cryptaria, Rhythm of Fear.
Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
Evergreen Terrace.
Evergreen Terrace, yeah. No, actually, I'm drawing blanks. Every good band has broken up now.
Yeah.
Rom was great, but they're done now.
This is going on too long.
Umana Nova, Umana Nita Nova, Nova, whatever you fucking say.
Umanita Nova. Of course. Yeah.
Listen to them.
Frameworks.
Listen to Frameworks. Pez.
Pez.
Yeah, Pez is pretty good.
Horsewhip.
Horsewhip. This is going on for so long. Ether Coven.
Ether.
all the friends that were friends.
Yeah. Just look up Florida Metal and you'll find
so many good bands. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll cut it there and that'll be it. So yeah, just hit the fucking thing. Great. Hit the fucking thing. I want to finish the blunt.
Blunt it up.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.